up week 6 of the new Buckmaster Show. I welcome you to the Buckmaster Show for Friday, February 11th, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL 1330, and we're always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We have all of our programs for the past 2 weeks, at least, archived there on buckmastershow.com. Fridays on the Buckmaster Show, it's our Friday Focus. We bring in a newsmaker or two into the studio for questioning by myself and one of our reporters' roundtable regulars. This week it's Dan Scheer with me from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. This week's Friday Focus features newsmaker interviews with Pima County Democratic Chair Jeff Rogers and Republican State Representative Vic Williams of District 26. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
Well, we'll begin with the big news of the week, really, the announcement by Senator Kyle that he will not be seeking a fourth term. Jeff Rogers, your reaction, and who might the Democrats have lined up on the bench as possible candidates?
Well, as you might guess, we're quite pleased to see Senator Kyle go. I've always said that were it not for Jim DeMint, he'd be the worst senator in the United States Senate. But we're pleased to see him gone. And in addition, despite what a poor senator he is, he would be a formidable foe. And therefore, he would be very difficult to beat in an election where he's the incumbent. So I think an open seat bodes well for us. We held that seat for, I think, 3 terms with Senator DeConcini. So this is an opening for us. I think it's way too early to speculate who might be the strongest candidate that we can put up against whoever the Republicans end up selecting.
I think you probably, Vic Williams, have a different view of Senator Kyle's leadership in Washington.
Well, obviously, I have much admiration for Senator Kyle and his demeanor and what he's brought to the table in Washington, D.C. for all these years. And probably the reason he's such a formidable foe, Mr. Rogers, is his effectiveness and his policies that he's brought forth to the state. But I think the Republican bench at this point in time, in a wide variety of candidates, is pretty large, pretty long, and you're going to be seeing people line up and already.
Jeff Flakes being talked about as possibly the front runner at this point, but you know, it's pretty early.
Jeff Flakes. Also, you know, you're taking a look at Sheriff Paul Babu from Pinell County. Shattuck, I believe, is his name has been mentioned, and even Russell Pierce's name is being brought forth this time, and it was on Fox News the other night. So I think you're going to see quite a few Republicans lining up for that, but there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of time left, and light years away, politically speaking, until that election's in full gear.
Well, I think that one of the things we're really looking forward to is seeing the kind of internecine warfare we're going to see from the Republican Party, because when we look back at the Angle nomination in Nevada, when we look at Christine O'Donnell in Delaware, we expect to see the same kind of thing occur here in Arizona. And were the Republicans to do the intelligent thing of putting up someone like Jeff Flake, he'd be a formidable opponent as well. But I'm not optimistic that that's what we'll see. I think what we'll see is some of the more extremist elements emerge, and someone like Russell Pierce, someone along those lines. And if we see something like that, that's something we will be delighted to run against the Tea Party element of the Republican Party.
Jeff, is a year and a half before the primary really too early to be talking about candidates? And if not,
for the Democrats, I think it is. We have probably the strongest candidate possible, sort of, shall we say, in dock, and that would be Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords. And she's rightfully focused completely upon getting well and her recovery, rumors had been around for a long time that she would be willing to challenge Kyle, and so we kind of have to wait and see what shapes up there. But there are many other strong Democratic contenders that I think would probably be interested in such a result.
Along those lines, can you talk a little bit about redistricting, the process? We're picking up a seat this year. What's it going to mean to the Democrats? How are they approaching this whole thing?
You know, I'm cautiously optimistic that this redistricting will change the face of Arizona. The supermajorities that Vic Williams enjoys in the legislature right now, they're not a product of last year's election. They're a product of a culmination of 10 years and the failed redistricting that occurred 10 years ago. It's taken us a while to get here, but they've gradually increased their their numbers over that past 10 years. So I'm optimistic that we're going to get a fairly drawn lines this time around, unlike what occurred back in 2000. So I think we're going to see quite a change, but it's a couple years out because they've got to draw them this year. The election will be in 2012, and then we won't see people actually in the legislature until 2013.
Vic, what do you think?
Well, I would like to address Mr. Rogers' comments about our supermajorities. You know, I would like to, you know, remind Mr. Rogers that, you know, the majority of legislators in these democratically held districts south of the Gila River, the 27 legislative spots are now held by 16 Republicans to 11 Democrats. And those are in Democrat majority type areas. And the only areas where the Democrats do, enjoy some prominence is in the downtown Tucson, the metropolitan Tucson area. And I might want to point out that maybe it's the policies, the failed policies behind the majority leaders in your party, the Kyrsten Sinemas, the David Shapiros, that are just outright liberal progressives that are not really in touch with the values and the voter viewpoints in Arizona.
Well, statistics show that there are only about 5 districts in the entire state out of 30 districts that are actually competitive, and that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is,
poor redistricting. It's based on criteria that are handed down by federal mandates. You have to.
The voters mandated that the competitive districts was one of the requirements of the statute or of the proposition that was passed. Mm-hmm. And this redistricting commission decided to move it to the bottom and say, we're going to follow all these other guidelines, but we're going to throw that one out. We're going to ignore that one. And Steve Lynn will tell you that. He was the chairman of the redistricting commission. So that's part of the problem. And part of the problem is that when you don't have competitive districts, if they're Democrat controlled, you're going to get the most liberal Democrats nominated, and then there's no real general election, so that liberal Democrat succeeds. Then in Republican districts, by the same token, if it's not competitive, you will have a primary, and perhaps the most conservative person emerges, and we end up with no general election. And so we end up with two sides of the spectrum and very little in the middle. And that's what we've seen emerge over the last 10 years, is the loss of the middle, and the middle Democrats as well as the middle Republicans.
Well, somehow blaming that towards the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, I don't think is right in your assumption.
I blamed it on the redistricting commission.
It's
14 minutes past the hour. This is Friday Focus on the Buckmaster Show. You are hearing from Vic Williams, state representative, and you're hearing from Jeff Rogers, the Democratic chair of the Pima County Party. And next to me is Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Vic Williams, how would you describe the tone so far of the legislative work that's going on up in Phoenix? Some have been critical that not enough's being talked about with the budget. More is being talked about weapons and social engineering issues. What do you say to that?
Well, there's some credence to that. But the problem that you have 90 individual members that go to the legislature. And each one of those members, be it in the Senate or the House of Representatives, have the right to bring forth what legislation they feel is important. You know, but right now we need to be focusing in on economic development, getting jobs back in the state of Arizona, dealing with our budget deficit, and the debt that has accrued under both administrations, both Democrats and Republicans, in the last 10, 12 years.
Vic, we talked a little bit earlier, there's going to be a jobs plan drop next week. Can you tell us a little bit about it and how it's coming down and what's in it for everybody?
Well, absolutely. You know, and I think that's something that Democrats and Republicans that agree upon is, like, there's a couple of taxes in the state of Arizona that are odious to business, our business personal property tax. Right now, the Democrats talked about that the last couple of years. I know us Republicans have looked at that. And those are things that inhibit business from coming to this state. Also, we have to incentivize people to come to the state that bring in high-paying jobs that just don't away from our traditional retail, away from our traditional construction jobs that sent people to the access roles because of the low wage or the type of income that was there. You know, take a look at Northwest Pima County and what we've offered. That now that we have close to 2,000 bioscience jobs up there that average about $75,000 per year, we're one of the largest hubs in the state now. We need to focus on that kind of economic development, and that's where our state's prosperity will be.
Jeff Rogers.
Well, I would agree with you, Bill, that these social engineering bills are being focused on to the loss of a focus upon the budget. We have a structural deficit that is not going to go away with any gimmicks or any short-term solutions. And instead of the legislature focusing on that, we've got things like banning abortions based upon gender selection. Well, that such things just don't even happen in America at all. It's a problem in China and India, but it's not a problem in America. We have all kinds of gun bills up there to basically allow guns in public buildings. God knows where the end of that is. Are they going to have them in courtrooms? Are we going to have them in council chambers, the supervisor's office? I mean, come on. Let's focus upon the problem that is at hand, which is basically building this economy, attracting jobs, and getting rid of the structural deficit. I think and we can all agree, maybe we do need to tweak some of these business taxes, but we can't be giving any tax breaks during a time when we have deficits like this unless we find a way to close the gap. It's almost like a person saying, I'm behind in my bills, I think I'll cut back my work hours. You know, people don't do that, and the government shouldn't do that either.
Vic Williams, about this, the handgun, banning multi-magazine handguns in Arizona. Well, for it or against that?
Well, I'm against the legislation. I think right now that legislation was brought forward for political purposes. You have people, obviously, that are just, you know, torn apart and asunder from the tragedy that happened here. And now's not the time to work off of those emotions. And it's not the clip size or magazine capacity. It's the individual that did the shooting. We live in a free and open society. We have personal liberties which allow us to carry handguns, and that's part of the consequences when you have that, juxtaposed to societies where you don't have these civil liberties and the tyranny of what government can bring from there.
Well, Bill, I'm in favor of any kind of rational, reasonable restrictions on firearms. Let's face it, no homeowner who's protecting himself needs a 30-round clip. 10 should be fine. Frankly, a shotgun is about the best thing a homeowner can have if someone invades their home. It's a lot better than pointing at a revolver. So the Supreme Court has held that you know, these kinds of restrictions are plenty constitutional, and for 10 years we had such a ban in place nationwide. Some states have extended that ban, even though the federal government let it lapse during the Bush administration. But assault weapons and 30-round clips are just unnecessary. Hunters don't use them, and homeowners don't use them. Sportsmen don't use them. I mean, it is it's absolutely ridiculous that we allow that.
Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News.
Jeff, you mentioned earlier some hard numbers as far as Democrats and Republicans goes. The Secretary of State's office delivers us hard numbers every quarter in the form of both parties losing lots and lots of people. Why is this happening? How does it concern you? What are you guys doing about it?
Well, I think there are several reasons. One of them is that as younger voters come in, we've noticed demographically that they don't want to pick a party. And so while Vic and I and our parents and grandparents might have been staunch members of a party, the younger voters aren't selecting a party. I think also some of the voters who are re-registering as they move into this state are finding that they find the vitriol between the two parties to be at such a high level that they decide, well, I'm just going to be an independent. And finally, another reason is that we don't punish independents in Arizona like many other states do. Most states only allow Democrats in Democratic primaries and Republicans in Republican primaries. In this state, both parties have allowed that the independents can vote in their primaries, except for the presidential preference primary. And so that means that you don't pay a price for being an independent. You still theoretically have a say in either the Democrat or the Republican primary.
Well, I think Jeff's right on this. That's something at least we can agree on this
point.
Are
you two agreeing on something?
We're actually agreeing on something here. We actually favor those who are independents, and the process gives them, I'd say, more rights in the electoral process than you would if you were in one party or another. You're restricted by your party if you're a Republican or Democrat to either vote Republican or Democrat in particular primaries. But as independent, you get your choice, and that would, I imagine, be attractive to someone who's registering to vote at this time in the state.
There is, of course, the one downside. I had my legal assistant decided that she was getting too much literature in the mail as a member of a party and decided to become an independent. And I warned her, and I was correct, that she would get twice as much as an independent because everybody will send her literature.
Everyone wants to talk to the independent, especially during election time.
A quick question before the break, only about a minute before we take a short break. Is the dump sheriff Dupnik recall running out of gas, Vic Williams?
Well, I don't know if it really had any gas to begin with. But once again, here's another issue where I think, you know, from the emotional reaction to the tragedy that happened in Tucson, that's where it spawned. Sheriff Dupnik's comments, I believe, were political in his nature, which spawned this. But I don't think it has any legs. And logistically, I don't see how it works, because if the recall was to work, if they were to get the 100,000 signatures, the recall doesn't happen until March of 2012, and the primary is, what, in August or September?
Within months, actually.
Logistically, I'm not sure if it really is the right place for these people to put the energy towards.
Well, I agree. It would cost the taxpayers $500,000 or more to run a special election. But on top of that, you don't get elected to a four-year term 8 times in a row without being one of the most popular people in this valley. And I have an extraordinary amount of admiration for our sheriff. He was my first boss when I moved here in 1979 at the sheriff's department. So I have a long history of following his career. And as a lawman and a public leader, he's just one of my great heroes.
It's 22 minutes past the hour. This is Friday Focused on the Buckmaster Show. Representative Vic Williams is here, Jeff Rogers is here, and Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News. We continue after these short breaks.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA 4-diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroMorePizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
It's 24 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. It's Friday Focus. State Representative Vic Williams is with us. Jeff Rogers is head of the Democratic Party in Pima County. Representative Williams, you've proposed a piece of legislation that would enable the owners of Tucson Greyhound Park to dramatically scale back racing at the track and focus more on accepting wagers on events elsewhere, including the possibility of ending dog racing there entirely. But that is not, I guess, your intent of the bill. Is that correct? Not to end dog racing? Or?
Well, the intent of the bill is not to end dog racing. It just gives the track the option not to race if they don't want. Right now, the economic model for them is profitable to continue dog racing. But odds are in the future it won't be, and this will give them the option not to race dogs, and that would effectively bring the end of greyhound racing in the state. Now, if both parties, the track ownership and the dog advocates, the greyhound advocate community, find some commonality here that suits both parties, then great. It's a wonderful opportunity when both groups can come together like this.
Jeff Rogers, would you like to see greyhound racing go bye-bye?
Well, you know, as a as a dog lover and who owns a lot of dogs from the Humane Society, I would. I do think it's something that exploits the dogs and is fairly abusive if not regulated very carefully. But on the other hand, I do remember when I moved here in 1979 what a vibrant place the track was down in South Tucson, and it's kind of like the ghost town of tracks now. So there's really no economic viability to the current model. So I think while some of us are open to that, there's another distinct problem here, and that distinct problem is the Native American casinos. And we sort of have a compact with the tribes that their casinos will be really the only gambling establishments in the state, and this sort of violates what I think is really that compact with our tribes. So that may begin to be a problem, and where we fail to agree on some form of I guess it would be televised racing at the tracks.
Okay, Dan Scheer from Green Valley News.
Having just come through a very interesting election cycle, I want to talk about social media, Twitter, Facebook, those types of things. How do those things change the way the parties are approaching a campaign?
I don't think it changes things. It allows us to get messages out to followers as to events we're holding, as to alert them to things that are happening in a fast manner. Whereas they might not hear about something until the Arizona Daily Star comes out tomorrow or the evening news tonight. Sometimes on Facebook and Twitter and these kinds of things, we can get something out in a more instantaneous manner. And I think it also allows legislators such as Mr. Williams and others to share their thoughts and alert their constituents about things. So I think I think they're helpful.
Well, I would agree, and I'm going to speak from a legislative standpoint. It allows me to communicate with my constituents in an unfiltered manner at a pace that I want to communicate to them. I don't have to rely upon other media type outlets to help broadcast our message.
Go ahead,
Jeff. And the other thing is that when you do rely upon media outlets, they may cut and paste what they want to tell the voters, and it may be the sexiest part, but sometimes the most important part isn't as sexy and doesn't get broadcast.
Quick question. We are quickly running out of time, less than 2 minutes. Federal access waiver, I think it's about $520 million that's at stake here. Mm-hmm. If the government says no to this, we're in a world, more of a world of hurt, aren't we, on the budget?
Well, we're in a horrible position as we are right now in the state of Arizona, but I think some of the understanding we have to be here is that the federal government is controlling state governments by the allocation of money that they have coming back into Arizona, and we're basically under the yoke of the federal administration when we're doing this, and it's steering us down a path of financial ruin right now in the state of Arizona, trying to comply and fund these programs. It's tough to talk about this issue in 30 seconds, but it's that needs to be brought out.
Well, in a nutshell, I don't see the federal government allowing the state to throw people off the access rolls as a solution to the state's economic problems. Our economic problems have been festering for a decade or more, and what it means, the biggest part of the problem is we rely way too much on sales tax revenue. Taxes should be a three-legged stool, with sales taxes just being one leg of that stool. And what we've done is we've cut and cut and cut for 24 years other taxes in this state, and then when we hit a recession, sales tax is the most volatile source of revenue, begins to plummet, and we can't replace that revenue because of the onerous requirements of the necessary votes it takes in the House and the Senate.
Jeff Rogers, thank you very much for being with us. Vic Williams, State Representative, thank you. And Dan Scheer from Green Valley News. Dan, you stick around because we have the Friday Reporters Roundtable coming up after the CNN News at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. You guys have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Who's your other reporter?
Tucson's Jolt. Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio Special Report, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Breaking news, history in Egypt. President Hosni Mubarak has decided to step down. Demonstrators in Cairo chanted, Egypt is free, after hearing the news from Vice President Omar Suleiman a few minutes ago.
President Mohamed Hosni Mubarak has announced to step down from the presidency of the Republic and commission the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces to take over the duties of the presidency.
Suleiman spoke through a translator. Mubarak ruled Egypt for nearly 30 years. He finally gave in to the pressure after 18 days of street protests. A source told CNN Mubarak fled Cairo earlier today and had gone to the resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh. This is a special report from CNN Radio.
AutoZone.
Want to make your tax refund go farther? Head to AutoZone.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Why not use your tax refund to protect one of your greatest investments, your car? It's a great chance to do that project you've been putting off. Whether it's a battery, brakes, engine, or transmission, AutoZone has everything you need to do any job right. And if you need a little advice, we're here to help. Make both your car and tax refund go farther. Get to AutoZone today.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Getting across town to a job interview is stressful enough without being late. But the GPS on my cell phone guides me right where I need to be with no problems along the way. I want the same thing when I do my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step, and calculations are guaranteed 100% accurate, so I know it's done right, which helps me reach my maximum refund guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Accurate calculation and maximum refund money-back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinker Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinker Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanker Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tanker Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and on the World Wide Web anytime at buckmastershow.com. It's time for the Friday Radio Roundtable. Joining me on the Friday Roundtable, Mark Evans is here from TucsonCitizen.com, Jim Ninsel of the Tucson Weekly, and Dan Shear from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Well, as Dan and I were talking with Jeff Rogers and State Representative Vic Williams, talking about the meaning of the Kyle announcement, Jim Ninsel, let's begin with you. Who's lining up on both sides to perhaps go for the Kyle seat?
I think it would be a shorter list of who's not lining up at this point on both sides of the aisle. But you're going to see a lot of folks. I mean, obviously, the announcement is still fresh, and people are going to be weighing their chances. But I think probably starting out at the lead on the Republican side would be Congressman Jeff Flake represents Maricopa County.
He's not very well known, though, in this part of the state, is he?
I'm not sure that matters when you're running for U.S. Senate, but Congressman Flake has a very big profile as somebody who's really gone after earmarks and federal spending, but he has some weaknesses on the immigration front, and his interest in opening up channels with Cuba and things of that nature that might cause some conservatives in the party to consider not going for Flake. You have Trent Franks. Trent Franks also has an interest in other congressmen from that area who's more socially conservative. Russell Pierce is certainly a wild card in all of this. And we also have Speaker of the House Kirk Adams certainly has some interest in running for Congress. And you got to keep in mind that not only – or I'm sorry – I'm getting ahead of myself because when these guys fall out of Congress, then you're going to have opening up of congressional seats and an additional congressional seat. So the dominoes are not only going to fall for the Senate, but they're going to fall for Congress, and then they're going to fall for the legislature as well. So you're going to see a whole lot of things opening up. On the Democratic side, the Democrats don't have much of a bench. The Washington insiders that I spoke to were looking at folks like Janet Napolitano, who certainly has some Democrats unhappy with her here in Arizona because of her decision to leave the state in the hands of Jan Brewer and the Republican legislature. You have, Dennis Burke, the U.S. attorney, is somebody that they're probably going to be taking a look at as well back there.
We could have as many as a half a dozen Democrats and maybe even a dozen Republicans that will be running for the seat. It only happens, rarely where you have an open Senate seat in the nation. And in Arizona, it's only happened a few times. So, there's going to be quite a scrum to see who runs. Jeff Flake is interesting because Flake potentially could straddle the Tea Party and the traditional Republican sides of the Republican Party, but where I'm really interested is how the Tea Party schism within the Republican Party is going to play out, and whether we get a traditional Republican or where they get somebody who plays more towards the Tea Party radicalism, and that could make the Republican primary quite interesting.
Dan Scheer from Green Valley.
I think, of course, and then on the Democrat side, you have to look at Gabrielle Giffords. And as we talked about earlier in the hour, she is focused on getting better. That's exactly where she should be. But I think there's enough time here where we're going to get where she can recover sufficiently to where she would be able to make a decision on this. But she certainly cannot be counted out. And she's would be a very, very strong contender, particularly now.
And she'll have some money to draw upon, too. I mean, I think that was where Rodney Glassman made his mistake in running against John McCain, is that he delayed and delayed and delayed, and he tried to run for a U.S. Senate seat in only in a six-month period and didn't spend near enough money. I mean, we saw Jim Peterson try to knock off John Kyle a few years back, and he spent something like
$20 million
and didn't get within 8 points.
His name, by the way, is being still kicked around.
Right,
with this many
people going wanting to run, they're all going to have their hands out, and so there's going to get donor fatigue. So I think the people who might have money already in the bank could have the edge getting started, but those wild cards, you never know.
I just wanted to throw in that I don't think Rodney's mistake was waiting too long to run. It was running at all.
Right.
and it wouldn't have mattered if he'd raised $20 million. He would have lost that race.
I want to ask these two guys, if I could, Bill, what they think of J.D. Hayworth, and if there's any sense there that he could make a mark on this.
Well, J.D. could certainly leap into the race, and he has a certain amount of a base out there, but I'm not sure how well that would sustain itself. He's already unable to win a primary against John McCain, and a lot came out about J.D. in the process of that kind of damaged his conservative bona fides with the earmarks that he requested, the infomercial that he did. I think kind of the blooms off that rose.
Right. And he tried to change himself from a delay Republican into a Tea Party Republican, and nobody was really buying it. Any support that he got was mostly a lot of the conservative Republicans in Arizona that are unhappy with John McCain. But I don't think he would even get single-digit percentages in a primary.
What's the back? Go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to add that one advantage that Flake has is that he's a terrific fundraiser, and money's going to make a big difference, and he's going to get into this very early.
And what's the backstory with why Senator Kyle decided not to go again? Was it perhaps the Tea Party influence, or worrying about raising so much money that he'd have to really put together for the campaign?
You know, I've been told that it was really a matter of, you know, looking at the fact that he's going to be 70 years old in 2 years, and his family, his wife, really wanted him to actually call it quits. And
he didn't want to run for a third term, but the Republican Party came, because 2006 was that tsunami Democratic year, and there was a lot of concern in the Republican Party of holding on to that seat, and so he, you know, took one for the team, if you will, and decided to run again. And he'd said when he first ran several years ago, again for the open DeConcini seat, that he only wanted to do it for two terms, and he got talked into a third term. So it's not surprising. It was a little bit surprising to me, though, because there was the potential that if he'd gotten reelected, he could have become the Senate Majority Leader in 2012 if the trends continue the way they're going.
It's about 41 minutes now past the hour. This is the Friday Radio Roundtable on the Buckmaster Show. Let's switch gears here and talk a little bit about the proposed Rosemont mine. Dan Scheer from the Green Valley News and Soharita Sun, opponents of the mine, filed suit on Monday charging that the U.S. Forest Service violated some federal laws. What's this about, Dan?
Well, what we can agree on is that Rosemont has been in meetings with the Forest Service and what they call cooperating government agencies, and the U.S. Forest Service is saying that they were giving technical help and they were just helping answer some difficult questions. Well, the opponents were not included in those meetings, and they feel like that was unfair. They want all work to stop on the draft environmental impact statement, and they want the minutes to those meetings. They want to know what was going on in there. The Forest Service says they have not violated any laws. The only thing we know for sure is that this is going to delay the process for sure.
And there still needs to be, and we had Supervisor Ray Carroll on the program, Jim Nintzel, there's still an air quality permit issue that Pima County has to sign off on.
There is, and I'm not sure how much power the county actually has to ultimately deny that, but certainly they're doing their best to monkey wrench this project and slow it down.
Rosemont's just not my area of expertise. It's not something I follow it simply by reading what Jim and Dan and the Star write, but so I would just like to see this thing sped up, either pull the plug on it or build it, one or the other. I think right now it's kind of it's an attrition process to just aggravate Rosemont to finally give up, because, you know, the copper prices can be so volatile that maybe it will become that it's not profitable.
Yeah, and Rosemont, I think, would like to see the same thing, because they've dumped in, I'm sure, more than $200 million into there and have not pulled out an ounce of copper, and they are being frustrated at every turn. And then in Green Valley, the big issue, of course, is water. We haven't really even started talking about that, but at some point people are going to get really aggravated, and that's a good word, with what's going on here, and they're just going to want some resolution.
Well, how long would Rosemont, how long do you think they would wait? You said how much money they've pumped in. They're in for the long haul, I guess.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. Is it hard to gauge if sentiment is going one way or another? Are things changing in Green Valley for them or against them?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm hearing from more people who are saying, look, if it's going to happen, let's just all get on board with it. And as we know, Rosemont has already moved into the community. They're giving out scholarships. There's sponsoring events and things like that. So they're serious about being here. But I think Rosemont has no choice, because they have dumped so much money into this. But is there a change in Green Valley? You know what? It might be a little bit too much to say yes, because overwhelmingly people are opposed to this. But there are more and more people coming out who are saying, you know what? If it's going to happen, though, and maybe like Mark says, they're just kind of getting worn down a little bit. They want it to finish.
It's 45 minutes now past the hour. This is the Friday Roundtable. Jim Nintzel, it seems like all we're hearing out of Phoenix are these social engineering issues and the weapons issues and very little about the budget.
Well, also the revolution against the federal government issues. I mean, we're seeing bills that would require federal regulators to register with a county sheriff and pay a fee if they come to town. And not having
to obey or supersede federal laws or something. I don't know.
A panel that would allow the state to decide which federal laws they want to follow, and sheriffs have to let the targets of regulation know that the regulators are coming, and any fines that are paid go into the state treasury rather than the federal. I mean, it's some pretty peculiar revolutionary stuff going
on.
It
sounds like South Carolina in 1860. And all that's going to go for naught. I mean, it's all for show. Even if it did get any of those bills were to get passed, they'd have no legal authority. It's just grandstanding. One of the things that I did hear last week that I thought was interesting is perhaps the reason why we're not seeing any movement on the budget is because they have asked for that federal waiver for removing people from the access rolls. And if there is a budget plan B, they're really stuck in not being able to present it, because it would then show the federal government, well, you don't really need to throw these people off because there is these other options. And so what we may end up seeing is them passing a budget with the expectation that they'll get the federal waiver. And if they don't get the federal waiver, then we'll have a special session in the summer or whatever, where they'll actually do real budget work. There was an interesting bill that was dropped last week or this week that shows at least some forward thinking, and that was the House Speaker's bill on trying to get a handle on the public pensions. There's some good in that bill. There's also some other things that I think they're going to make the public employee union scream, but at least it's a place to start talking and start having the debate, because it is a real problem. So I was glad to see that bill.
And you have to appreciate the fact that House Speaker Kirk Adams actually has opted out of his pension program in advance of pushing this legislation. But getting back to the budget, I can't remember a time when we actually saw a budget crafted through the budget committees. I mean, it's been years since they put on the show of having budget bills go before those committees, but ultimately these budgets are always crafted in a short period of time behind closed doors between leadership and the governor's office, and I think that's the way it's gone for some time now. And so I guess I'm not surprised that they've sort of even given up the pretense of doing the bills out in the budget committees.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up something, a different topic if we could, Bill, just
sure.
In this different direction, the birthright bill, and
right.
We know that it's going to be brought up again next week, and obviously did not have support, and it's interesting, the discussion out there, why is it that it didn't have support? I think people really expected it to not take off necessarily, but not fail like it did, and I think it's an interesting issue to Arizona, but it's not important. And we had talked earlier today about a state that is in this much trouble needs to be talking about important things, not necessarily these types of things that will get dealt with on occasion later on, but right now is just really not that important.
And I think it offends American sense of freedom, really. I mean, we don't want the government picking and choosing citizens. You're a citizen and you're not a citizen, and these are the rules, and we can change the rules at any time. That's the wonderful thing about the 14th Amendment. If you're born here, you're a citizen, and I think that's where you're seeing, I mean, if you look at the parade of people at that committee hearing last week when the bill was rejected, it was across all political spectrums. There's some people that have some serious problems with this monkey and with the Constitution, and I think there's part of that. There's also some exasperation that this is pointless and it doesn't really do anything. But there's some of it, I think, has to do with people saying, you know what, I think this is the right thing for the United States to have.
And it was a very narrow failure in this committee. I mean, it wasn't even technically a failure, because they pulled the bill when they saw they didn't have the votes. Mm-hmm. And there were a number of Republicans who would have supported it. It was just a matter of you still had a couple with their heads screwed on straight who were willing to challenge it. And I think it's interesting that now you're going to go from the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, I think, or maybe perhaps over to Appropriations in order to advance this bill.
Where the bill sponsor is the chairman of that right. committee. So,
Jim, we've only got a few minutes left. I want to point people in the direction of the Tucson Weekly. You've got a very nice piece, very thorough, with the Democratic mayoral candidate. I think he's the only Democratic mayoral candidate to step forward, Tucson attorney Jonathan Rothschild.
Yeah, I don't think many people know who Jonathan Rothschild is, so I sat down with him and covered a variety of topics and actually had a much longer version on our online site at The Range at TucsonWeekly.com on our daily dispatch, because there simply wasn't enough space in the print edition for the full text of our conversation, so if folks are interested in learning more about Jonathan.
So how's this race shaping up for mayor?
Well, Jonathan Rothschild certainly seems on track to win the Democratic primary at this point.
What about Rodney Glassman? Is he going to go for it?
That's what Rodney's going to do.
You know, we've had some rumbles that Rodney, there's certainly some word out there that Rodney is now taking another look at that. But now that the Senate seat is opened, I'm sure he's thinking, well, why run for mayor when I can run for Senate again?
You know, if the Democrats put up somebody to run for mayor, it would at least be progress over the last time, because I don't think they ran anybody against lockups.
Republicans.
How big a deal, Jim? We only got a minute to go. This building mini dorms in Jefferson Park in the UA area.
Oh, you know, this is a tricky subject because obviously the folks in the neighborhoods don't like these mini dorms being built next door to them. But at the same time, you have very limited ability to regulate these things because of a voter proposition. And so the city has taken a step that may or may not get it sued and may or may not hold up in court.
Yeah, the city attorney said, you know, we're in violation of Prop 207 if we pass this, and the council decided to do it anyway. Although they technically didn't pass it, they set the stage for them to pass it.
So. Okay, that was Mark Evans. Jim Nintzel's been here, and Dan Scheer. Have a great weekend, all of you. Thank you for being on the Friday Roundtable.
Thanks, Jim.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator, artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, 3 blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website, sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
We love that music on the Buckmaster Show. 54 minutes past the hour, and that means Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, the host of the weekly radio show On the Menu Live, which airs Thursday afternoons at 5 here on KJLL. Matt, welcome again.
Thank you so much, Bill. What a glorious weekend we have in store.
We've got a beautiful weekend for Valentine's Day, and you talk about Valentine's Day, you talk about food and going out to eat and supporting our local restaurants.
Absolutely. I mean, when doesn't Matt Russell ever talk about food? I mean, I just thank you for the soapbox to stand up on. My two picks, Bill, for this weekend for folks that are really looking for great culinary experiences. Let's start with the one we're all going to be channeling our inner Don Drapers for you Mad Men fans out there. Dan Dickhart and his team up the Omni Tucson National Resort, Bob's Steak and Chop House, has a beautiful dinner in store that's actually starting tonight, going to go through Valentine's weekend and through Valentine's Day. A wonderful, exquisite four-course meal, including a bottle of Piper Brut champagne with the dinner. The price is only $85 a person plus tax or gratuity, and I'm telling you, this is one of the best steaks in town. Big cocktails, big wines, big steaks. Enjoy a great cigar out on their beautiful patio after dinner. Bob's Steak and Chop House up to the Omni Tucson National Resort, one of my big picks for the weekend.
Yeah, and that champagne sounds pretty good, too.
Indeed. For the listeners, Bill, that are looking for more a more casual encounter, our good friends over at the Dry River Company, which is over on Kolb, just south of Speedway. A lot of people know about what they're doing with pizzas, and they do some really cool custom pizzas. But in addition to all the special pizzas they're going to be having this weekend, they're also going to be doing a great prime rib dinner, which includes a salad, mashed potato, asparagus, spears, and this great au jus and horseradish cream. 10-ounce, only $15. 16-ounce, only $20. So for those of you looking for a kickback, casual, comfortable place to dine, the Dry River Company is one of my picks as well.
Well, I think you know what my two picks are going to be.
Let me guess.
Arizona Inn, certainly a wonderful place to take that special Valentine.
Indeed.
And Vero Amore Pizza, since we're talking about pizza at Fort Lowell and Swan and out at Dove Mountain. Great pizza there at Vero Amore.
Yeah, both Vero Amore and Arizona Inn, I'm delighted that they're part of your show because they've been favorites of the Russell families for many years. I'm delighted that they're part of your group.
Other stuff going on this weekend, one of the big things, of course, the Tucson Gem and Mineral Societies. This is really the big show of the Gem Show at the Tucson Convention Center. This is always a great event going on today, Friday, and then Saturday, and then Sunday wraps the whole thing up.
Yeah, absolutely. We're so lucky to have to continue to host that world-class event right here in the Old Pueblo.
On the Menu Live, coming up Thursday night with Matt Russell, where are you going to be visiting?
Well, we're going to be kicking off Rodeo Week in style, Bill, at Chad's Steakhouse and Saloon on Swan and Fort Lowell. This is their 20th anniversary throughout the year.
Wow.
Indeed. And they've invited us to come experience the best of the Old West, so I'm going to see if I can find my boots and don them for this special occasion next Thursday at Chad's at 5 o'clock.
They put a pretty good steak on the table, don't they, there at Chad's and Prime
Absolutely.
Rib?
Absolutely. I mean, you walk into this place and you feel like you've gone back in time. I mean, this is traditional, authentic, Western-style steakhouse, the likes of which just doesn't exist, I don't think, around town.
Okay, Matt Russell, I know you are the man when it comes to food and wine and what's going on, and we appreciate your support here on the Buckmaster Show.
Always a pleasure. I'm going to go find something to eat right now, Bill. Thanks.
Get ready to dance. Okay. Thanks, Matt. Want to remind you, the Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates, certified public accountants located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger, the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. I can personally endorse Michael C. Flowers. This guy is the best CPA in Arizona. He really knows what he's talking about. If you need a CPA, check out Michael C. Flowers. I want to remind you that the Buckmaster Show is a production of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC. On behalf of Team Buckmaster, our producer, Rosemary Brandt, and our marketing director, Deborah Howard, the lady from the land of Lincoln, who will appropriately enough be celebrating her birthday tomorrow, Lincoln's birthday. We've got a beautiful chocolate rum cake waiting for Deborah right after the show, and we want to wish her a very happy birthday. I am Bill Buckmaster, wishing you a wonderful wonderful and safe weekend. And we've got a great lineup, of course, coming up on the Buckmaster Show as we kick off week 7. Do you believe it? We've already got 6 weeks on the Buckmaster Show. Remember, we archive the shows at www.buckmastershow.com. And we're live 9 to 10, Monday through Friday on KJLL AM 1330. Remember, our friend John C. Scott, all next week on the John C. Scott Show, 3 to 5 in the afternoon. John is in Washington, D.C. It's going to be a great week. You have a great weekend.
Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.